Hello, it's Owen Shehan here from Off The Ball, and the FIFA World Cup 2026 is here. And let's be honest, the matchday version of ourselves can look a little committed. Jerseys, face paint, scarves and questionable weather, whatever you have, maybe even a full costume if your team makes a run, you can look a little worse for wear come the end of it all. But the World Cup, it's not just about the football. It's the atmosphere, it's the nights in the pub, it is the watch parties with your mates, and maybe even meeting someone new. That is where Lynx comes in. As an official personal care sponsor of the FIFA World Cup 2026, Lynx's premium fragrances are here to help you smell your best, even in the middle of full matchday madness. Lynx, smell your best when you look your worst. Now, enjoy your podcast.
Off the ball, GAA.
Look, I suppose I was just out trying to commit it to the ball. I think he thought he was going to pull in it. Clearly, obviously, tripped him. I think he didn't have possession of the ball, and guess what Thomas Hall said to me, it was a yellow card, so I don't really know the rule, to be honest with you, but I was lucky for it.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
With Viagra Connect 50mg film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150mg tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie, subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
We aren't going to start with the football, though. We're going to start with the rugby.
Oh, yeah, are we?
I think so.
Yeah, let's do it, yeah.
News overnight. Well, everybody who watches this show knows that Rog was in the mix for the Leinster gig from about a month ago when we first floated the idea.
Yeah.
And now it's been confirmed that Rog is in the mix for the Leinster gig by David Humphreys overnight.
Yeah.
Not surprising.
It's exciting, yeah. I'm actually not that surprised, no.
Now the Munster fans can lose their shit. When we said it first, they were like, ah, no. And sorry, some of the Leinster fans, I suspect.
Yeah, who's going to lose their shit more?
Every job.
Yeah, but obviously...
Well, there were some that only, he singled out that he didn't want to do, to be fair.
And there's only one job available.
Yeah, like, it doesn't surprise me. Like, it's a European... He's an elite European head coach. And there's an elite European... It's a weird dynamic, it is for sure. But
it's his rival for the 10 position who will ultimately make the final decision from 20 years ago about him going to the club that he wound up the most and had the biggest fights with. Good box office stuff.
Yeah, you can't hold grudges. Rugby is too small. It's too small.
Yeah, it's also
especially if you
life,
go into coaching.
Right?
No.
Especially sport.
Is this
who'll be holding the grudge?
Would this be the equivalent of like maybe like Steven Gerrard managing United?
Well, Steven Gerrard needs to be good. No. And give me an example of someone good here.
Sorry,
Jurgen Klopp.
It'd have to make sense at the same time, like in terms of qualifications. He's a 2-time European winning coach, European Cup winning coach. So
yeah,
I'll have a think.
It's not crazy.
The more he stays silent on it, I think the more speculation is going to be as well.
Yeah,
if he just comes out and says, "I'm not interested."
There's no way he's not going to say that.
No,
we've got to kind of like.
He's thinking of his coffers, bank coffers, I think. Unless he says.
And look, I'd say he's going to be much in demand. The trouble is that if you sign up for a gig now, you rule yourself out of all the available international jobs that come up after the World Cup.
Like Glasgow.
Go either way.
Yeah.
That's not the opposite. He waited.
In that it's. What?
I don't know, maybe. So Glasner is the parallel because he told everybody I'm available.
Yeah,
too soon.
And now there's nothing left for him. But there would be in like a year's time, or even a few months' time.
Arsenal Forest, but yeah.
Yeah, I like it, and I think it's if you look at it in terms of getting an elite coach and who was an elite player and people love him in Irish rugby, most people getting him back into the Irish system, I think that's a positive thing. And one day you would imagine he's in the running for an Ireland job once Andy Farrell does move on.
Yeah, you would have said if the Ireland job had been available after the World Cup, which is the time frame we're talking about here is essentially around the time of the World Cup. You would have said that he would have been in the mix for the Ireland job. They've previously stated they want somebody working within the Irish system. Now, everybody wants what they want, but you don't always get what you want. Getting him back into Leinster, though, would almost guarantee him the Ireland gig if it went well.
What would it mean for the likes of Sam Prendergast? Like, what impact do you think he would have on his career trajectory and bringing him up?
You would imagine positive, like, and you know, Rog hasn't been, I wouldn't say he's been blessed with, you know, world-class tens at La Rochelle, but he's made really good players out of them, like your Hastoys and your Yaya Wests. They're not world beaters by any stretch, but they're not really internationals. I know Hastoy does play for France the odd time, but he's managed to win two European Cups under or with them at 10. So, you know, it'd be interesting to see how he'd manage the situation, having three really good tens there in Byrne, Prendergast and Carberry now as well, and a couple of young lads coming through. But I don't know, it wouldn't be a guarantee that he, you know, improves them. You know, Sexton, not that he hasn't done a good job so far, but there was periods there where Crowley and Prendergast's kicking in particular wasn't great, and we're still yet to see them kick consistently very well. So I don't know what the immediate impact of it is, but I can only imagine it's beneficial for everyone in Leinster, to be honest, because you have a former great Irish player and then you have an amazing head coach coming in. So
Brian Lavin, see what the dynamic the is.
Yeah,
he's suggesting Andy Moran managing Roscommon would be similar to this.
Yeah
that's never going to happen. Never going to happen, absolutely not. He's a Roscommon man, obviously, Andy, geographically, but his heart is definitely with the green and red.
Do you think as a player would it be hard to accept someone like this coming into the club? Because, like, obviously, like, Rog has a lot of history with Leinster, but it's not history with the current selection of players. Do you think that impacts?
I don't think so. I think because you're, as a player, you've only a short window to be a player, and you're trying to maximise the absolute most you can out of yourself and out of your team. If the best fella's available, no matter what he did 20 years ago, like 20 years ago, most of them players were nappies. So, like, that has absolutely no bearing on those as players. Now, I know historically, obviously, with the players in line for a job, I don't think he can take into account what happened in the past. So, no, as a player, I think you're absolutely focusing on yourself, and that's only going to be a positive for the team as well.
Like, that it's the Springbok-Ireland rivalry, not really the same in that, you know, there's not a huge amount of history behind it, but the way it was being described when it happened was kind of similar. It's like, this is a deal with the devil, per se. And I think it's worked out okay. Not perfect, but, like, they love him in there. The players love him. So I don't think, I don't see why not. But I see there are people in the comments not happy with the prospect of it. Shire O'Shea says, I'm a Munster fan. If Rog goes to Leinster, I promise I will burn my Munster jersey with O'Gara 10 on the back outside of Thomond Park. It will be the biggest Judas disgrace of all time.
Wow. Those vintage jerseys are worth a lot.
And they're
if it's an original, if it's one of the ones with the Toyota logo from the, you know, I'd be like, wouldn't be burning that. Stick it on eBay so some Leinster fan can buy it. I don't know. I think, we had heard that this was a realistic thing. That's why we brought it to air. It's been confirmed that it's a realistic thing. I think he wouldn't be saying it if they weren't. He said he's had a conversation with him recently and talked about his coaching ambitions. You don't say, yeah, he's definitely an option if it's not an option. So until they finally make a decision and make an announcement, then maybe it'll all be in the realm of speculation. But suddenly you'd make him favourite, I think, off the back of this.
Do you think, yeah?
Yeah, we'd be making him favourite, yeah.
You'd think so.
Maybe, yeah. There's a few out there still, in my head at least, would be still right in the mix there. And Johnny Sexton, like, no one's really talking about him.
But they've
a very strong history in giving head coaches jobs off the back of just playing, really. And would he leave the current role he's in? I know it's an ideal job in that he gets to have a foot in the men's and women's camps, and, you know, gets to go on tour with them and all those type of things, and help out with the kickers and the skills side of things. But I don't think would you turn it down? I know it's quite early on, but they do have a track record in doing that.
Yeah. You'd be taking him out of the Ireland setup after the World Cup. I just think O'Gara has a much deeper track record of actually knowing what it takes to do the job.
It does, yeah.
And maybe they did that with Leinster because it was a response to what had happened with Matt O'Connor. And Matt O'Connor had experience and then wasn't very good when he came over, but Leo was in the background and then stepped up.
Yeah.
And as soon as he stepped up, he had a really difficult start. and then they got experience in around him. And Graham Henry came in as a consultant for a summer, and that's when he took off as a head coach. So I presume they would try and get somebody more experienced now, because the job is a much better, bigger job because Leo's been so successful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Felipe is obviously the other one that gets mentioned.
Yeah, I like the idea of Felipe.
There was no confirmation there. So anyway, it's interesting. The Ireland team has been named as well.
It has.
Well, are you happy with it?
It's a very exciting team. You like a team that's just good crack, don't you? Yeah. It's one of those. So Tom O'Toole starts at loose head. Ronan Keller at hooker. Thomas Clarkson, Tyke Byrne, captains for the first time. James Ryan, Jack Conan, Nick Timoney, Sean Jansen, Craig Casey and Kieran Frawley are your halfbacks. Jacob Stockdale, Stuart McCluskey, Robbie Henshaw, Jimmy O'Brien and Jamie Osborne plays a fullback. And then the bench.
The bench is interesting, right?
Tom Stewart, Billy Bahan, Sam Elo, Cormac Isichukwu, Bryn Ward, Nathan Doak, Harry Byrne and Bundy Aki. So Billy Bahan, Sam Elo, Bryn Ward and Sean Jansen are all in line to make their Irish debuts.
Jansen from the start.
Yeah. Jansen starts, yeah.
And which is interesting in itself,
yeah.
Conan's at six,
yeah. Yeah. I would have thought, out of the two number eights there in Bryn and Sean, I would have thought Bryn would get the start just because he'd been in the squad during the Six Nations, a bit more up to speed maybe, but Sean Jansen was in the wider squad from the beginning of this campaign. Bryn Ward was brought in, obviously, when Caelan Doris's injury came to light, so maybe it makes sense in that way. But yeah, very exciting. It's the type of team we haven't seen for a long time, in that it's just full rotation, trying a few players out. Kieran Frawley gets his first start at 10 for Ireland. I think he started in Ireland A game last year, and that's his only start in a green jersey. So that'll be interesting, alongside Craig Casey as well. No Gibson Park, obviously, at all. And Harry Byrne getting a chance off the bench as well. Henshaw back in the team. Very exciting. And I think you kind of need that for these type of games, just because, you know, every game is important in this tournament, it seems, with the world ranking implications and all that. But sometimes it can be tough to get up for these games, especially when there's going to be loads of great matches over the weekend. So having a team that's exciting, bringing in all the new debutants, I think it creates a bit of buzz about it, doesn't it?
Yeah, people are interested in this game now in a way that maybe if it was the same lads going out and winning 40-0, you'd be like, okay, grand.
Even Timoney getting a start. Like, he hasn't really got his chance in a starting 15 for a long time. So that's even stuff like that, that's great to see.
Yeah, he's been explosive every time he's come off the bench. Has the success of Connacht Rugby had an impact on the GAA? Are they living cheek by jowl? Is everybody delighted to see each other succeed?
To a point, I'd say, yeah, definitely. I think there's probably the last few years where players are getting to a certain age where decisions have to be made. I think that's kind of the big thing. 14, 15, 16-year-olds that kind of are...
And suddenly it's interesting to be a Connacht Rugby player in a way that maybe 20 years ago it was less.
I think probably our most famous one is probably Jack Harty. Jack is an exceptional minor footballer. Absolutely in line probably to play senior football for Roscommon, and obviously he chose to play rugby, and fair play to him, he's made a great career for himself. But there's loads of players like that, and you'd hate to see players say jump and chip and just closing themselves off for one sport, and then maybe they don't make it, and then they mightn't then have maybe the necessary skill set to get back into a different sport. It doesn't have to be GAA, it could be any sport. That is probably the only thing. And obviously Connacht especially, it's a small pick for a small pool. You want to make sure that anybody who is playing, you know, that obviously that they're up to the level, but if they don't make it, that they can basically seamlessly come back and play whatever sport it is. And I don't want to say it has to be GAA, because there's loads of sports down there, obviously, with soccer, Sligo Rovers, Galway United and stuff like that. So I think success for players locally is only a good thing. It only just inspires young fellas and young women as well, so it's great.
There was one other thing I just wanted to... Everything that we're doing today. Josh Kerr has been writing a column in the Telegraph sports section recently, and he's going to try and break the world record. I think it's for the mile. And he's talking about a very specific set of shoes that have been built just for this. It's the Hyperion 222. That's the kit. And then he's got the Brooks Runners. And apparently it's got very specific titanium studs. And he says it's making him a faster runner. I'm like, well, this guy's one of the fastest runners in the world over his distance anyway. And if he is finding that there's, you know, marginal gains to be made from wearing better gear, when is this gonna happen, the rest of the stuff? Like, predators were a big deal. Are mm-hmm. we going to see soccer players suddenly running an extra 10K and it not be from medical advances? And when are we going to see GAA lads kicking the ball from the halfway line over?
Well, I guarantee he's saying that and he's getting the pair of runners free, definitely.
He's definitely,
so
yeah.
If a player has been given a pair of runners for free, he'll do any sort of bells and whistles with to obviously get their attention. But I think boots play, and like, I think as an athlete or as a sports person, I think you have to be very comfortable in what you're wearing. I think like I've, maybe because I used to take freeze, I was very pernickety. If I liked a pair of boots, or if I wore a pair of boots for the first time and didn't like them,
they were gone.
Out the door.
Right.
Yeah, it's a funny one.
And did they change much from the time, say, you were 16 to the time you were retiring?
Definitely, yeah.
Are they much better, or?
I think they are. Like, I think you have to be honest about it. Like, I probably got a lot of abuse about this. I would have worn Puma Kings and Puma boots and black, even black boots. And I think maybe last year, before I retired, I came out with a pair of. So I was always kind of black, normal Puma Kings, but New Balance as well, they're a great boot. But definitely over the last few years, there's definitely been like upgrades and what boots. And lads are so pernickety, so funny. Like, you don't think it's a big thing, but like football boots are such a huge thing. Like, remember, like, you're wearing them 4 or 5 times a week, including training, and they have to be perfect. And if they're not perfect, they're
shot. How often do you go through a new pair?
Oh, I'd say you'd go through definitely 3 or 4 throughout the year. Like, if the league, you're probably getting multi-studs like studs and molies. Then obviously when the ground hardens up, you're getting a new pair as well. And then probably when you're heading back for club season, you might just throw in, depends when the expenses come in, you might get yourself a new pair as well. So, I think it's huge. I don't think it can be actually underestimated how important they are and how important that your footwear are, because like they're only as good as obviously the foot that's in them. But if you're not playing well and if your shooting's a bit off, you'd only look for any excuse to say the boots aren't great.
Yeah.
You know?
The one thing that struck me was that you go and you look at them now and they're not really as strong as they used to be, as in it used to be a proper form of leather and now it's whatever, made from whatever material. Were they actually better for kicking?
I think they're probably better for kicking because they're a lot tighter. The boots that you wear now, even like a size 10 is a size 10, but a size 10 in a certain boot or a certain brand feels so much tighter.
Yeah.
And once they're wrapped around your foot, I actually think we're chatting about Roger, he used to wear, I think, half a size smaller, so the boot could feel wrapped around his foot when he was kicking. I think a lot of boots are like that now. Like, when you put on a pair of new boots now, like, it takes a while. Like, you still have a few blisters after.
Do you ever change your boots during a game? Like, it wasn't going well in the first half.
No, but I did in a warm. I just wasn't happy. And I think I missed half the warm-up because I was in putting on a pair of boots. I think the manager was wondering where I was gone. But it was just a case of I just didn't fancy them and I just changed them. And yeah, it was fine. I think as well, it's probably a psychological thing as well. Yeah.
How'd you play?
I played all right, yeah. I was happy enough.
Yeah.
Happy enough, yeah. We lost the game. I'm not going to say what game we lost. But I was happy enough how we played. That's probably it for a political answer.
Would you have preferred the boot to be that little bit tighter for a connection with the ball and feel when you're hitting the shots? Because it always felt like the tighter the boot or the more feel you had with it, the better connection you could make with it?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. And I think my game was obviously predominantly around trying to score as much as I could. So maybe someone who maybe might be a man marker or someone who doesn't kick the ball as much might be happy enough kind of with any boot. And there's a lot of lads that would just throw in any boots and away you go. But I think when you're in a certain position or if you have a lot of contact with the ball with your foot, I think the footwear is really, really important. So I would have been very, very pernickety with it, all right, yeah.
If these runners are actually legitimately making them run faster, at some point that's going to come into GA, right? Some team will get the fast runners and they'll be a split second ahead of everybody for 1 year.
Yeah, and then what will we do then? We'll just copy one another.
Yeah.
And we'll all do it then, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. It's just in a sport like that, in sprinting or if it's swimming or whatever, like, that is a game of numbers, though. It's very fine margins, and those fine margins matter a bit more than, say, your field sports and your ball sports.
I'd say the aggregation of a tiny margin, if you get, so you're just behind Clifford, if you're level with Clifford, is that not exactly what you need? Would that not then aggregate it out over 100 randomised clashes every second across
maybe,
the pitch?
Maybe. I just like the, I don't know the exact stats behind it, but the the 100-meter record is only like 2 seconds faster than it was like 80 years ago or something. Do you know? So those improvements, they're extremely fine, but they do matter. Whereas in GA, I feel like, you know, are your boots going to help you mark David Clifford any better? I don't know. I'm not convinced.
Might get you out ahead of the ball slightly, a split second.
Yeah, he's still scoring 110.
Well, we'll come back to that later on.
On a bad day.
Hello, it's Owen Shehan here from Off the Ball, and the FIFA World Cup 2026 is here. And let's be honest, the match day version of ourselves can look a little committed. Jerseys, face paint, scarves in questionable weather, whatever you have, maybe even a full costume if your team makes a run, you can look a little worse for wear come the end of it all. But the World Cup, it's not just about the football. It's the atmosphere, it's the nights in the pub, it is the watch parties with your mates, and maybe even meeting someone new. That is where Lynx comes in. As an official personal care sponsor of the FIFA World Cup 2026, Lynx's premium fragrances are here to help you smell your best, even in the middle of full match day madness. Lynx, smell your best when you look your worst. Now, enjoy your podcast.
We do have big GA news as well, Ger. So the Thursday ahead of the All-Ireland final, 23rd of July, we've got Tommy Rooney, Owen Shehan, James O'Donoghue, Paddy Andrews, and Kieran McGeaney as a special guest for the All-Ireland special in Croke Park with thanks to AIB. It is the 23rd of July, the Thursday before the All-Ireland men's final, and you can get your tickets on offtheball.com/events. AIB, proud sponsor of the GAA All-Ireland Senior Football Championship, hashtag for the life you're after. So I think there's going to be a few interesting bits at that.
Mad people recently, there's genuine concern that he might be gone, that he's made the decision already. Now, he hasn't said it, so that's pure speculation, but do you think he would step away, having just won Ulster? Like,
I don't see it. I think I read some crazy stat. He's been involved with a senior team since 1992, every year. Like, that is just, like, that's a lifetime.
It is,
like,
yeah.
He probably doesn't know any different. And I just think the way the year ended up, I think there was so much promise, and obviously they got the toughest strike imaginable heading down for Clarny. I couldn't see him stepping away. I think the team there, and he even said afterwards that he said that there's lads in there that are of a certain age, but he still thinks that they have what it takes to come back for the year. So if he's saying that, you're probably under the assumption that he's thinking of hitting for the road as well in terms of going again. So I think he's box office. I think he's like, he did an hour last year with Tommy Rooney up in Armagh. Like, that was just listening to him and just hearing what he thinks. And just, because you don't hear a lot from him. Obviously, after games, he's box office and he talks about the game, but you don't kind of hear him in that kind of philosophical sort of mood and talking about all sorts. So if he does go, I think he'd be a huge loss. I think he's one of those creatures, like those mythical creatures in the GAA that we just love. We want to get to know more about.
Yeah.
And he's very, I know for a fact that the players up there,
yeah. His legacy is still that Brian Flanagan is the hardest working man, and it didn't work out for him this year, but like the work ethic that that group of Kildare players had, they learned from him, and hopefully it ends up being beneficial to them in the long run. But like, that's still the stupidest decision in the history of sport.
Crazy.
Like, two votes go against him, and...
But it was the same in, was it summer 2023? The year before they won the Ireland?
Yeah.
There was talk in Armagh that he's had his time now, let's get rid of him. But I think he obviously won that vote or whatever. I think it was a tight enough vote. Like, I think people, especially in GA, like, we're so trigger happy. Like, even after, I know we're going to be chatting about the games the weekend, after the Roscommon game, Mayo, and people in Mayo were talking about Andy Moran. Like,
just in the door, yeah.
Not the right man for the job. And
yeah.
The man is only, he's only in the door. Like, it's, I think we're a bit trigger happy. I think we're kind of following maybe the soccer kind of thing of, let's just hire and fire and see what we can do.
Yeah, and it hasn't really worked out that often. Changing coaches for that. Having said that, there probably are some coaches who've reached the end of the line. Maybe we'll talk about that a little bit later on as well.
Go on. He's sort of in the middle of a rebuild as well.
Low key, the team is very different from the team that won the All-Ireland.
Yeah, I can't remember who wrote it, but somebody actually did a breakdown of it where there's almost like 10 new players in the starting lineup now, essentially, if you look back to last year's squad. So you'd imagine that it just isn't the right time for him to step away at all. There's definitely more in the squad that they showed this year.
Yeah.
Disappointed in Kerry. I do find it interesting that they're the one team that have such a spread of scorers across the team. Like, they were averaging 11 scorers across the championship this year. Like, I wonder, would they almost be better focusing on getting their main men on the ball now, sort of like everyone is with their shooter to get the two-pointers? Or, like, the aggregation of scorers across the team is great, but if you look at the teams that have gone deep now, it's all 2 to 3 men that are getting the ball through and getting the two-pointers and getting the scores.
Yeah, well, I think that's his biggest strength. I think that, like, even this year, there was no talk of the players that they were missing, or, as Gerry, you're right, like, there's such a big difference from the All-Ireland start, the team that won the All-Ireland against Galway a couple of years ago. Like, there's been very little chat about, oh, they're missing X, Y and Z. It's next man up, and the next man up has been performing. I think the way he's been able to do that, and yeah, there's probably is merit in what you're saying, and in terms of trying to maybe to get a Conte on the ball more, stuff like that, but the reason why that's not the case is because the players that have come in are playing so well. And this is the thing with the GAA as well, like, you're probably looking that they were knocked out obviously before the quarter final, thinking not a great year, but on the face of it, like, they lost to Kerry in Killarney. Like, everybody's losing to Kerry in Killarney. That's the reality of it. They won the Ulster title. That's kind of the big thing the last, what, 18, 19 years. So I think that's their biggest strength, that they're able to just keep regurgitating players. Like, even the likes of McCormack, McMullen, their half forward line this year, exceptional and completely brand new to what it was a couple of years ago even.
Yeah. You do think it's a shame that they didn't go deeper, because Oisin Conaghy was surely a shoe-in for an All-Star this year the way he was playing. It would have made him the joint top holder of All-Stars in Armagh as well at such a young age.
Yeah.
He's just such a phenomenal star, and so athletic and so good on the ball and such a good shooter. Like, he's definitely one of the best in the country at this point. It is a shame that they didn't go deeper to see more of these players. Like, the Oisin Conaghys of the world, that's who you watch GAA for, really, isn't
it? Like, even the loss of Kieran Donaghy as well isn't talked about too much, but, like, not only are you losing that, and their attack has come under a bit of criticism here and there and taking the fist of points or whatever else, so you're adapting to that, but then he's also gone to one of their biggest rivals.
Yeah.
You know, he's going home, obviously, but you see Donaghy out in the sideline for Kerry now as well. He is marshalling that attack like an NBA coach, you know, and it had an impact in Killarney, obviously, so it's such a different setup to what they had, so I don't think you can compare it to the All-Ireland winning team nearly, but they're still winning the Ulster Championships, and, like, that's as competitive as any competition in GAA at the minute. So yeah, I think there's not a person in Armagh that'd want to see him go.
No, like, a straightforward draw and they're preparing for the All-Ireland semi-final this weekend, and he's definitely not coming to the roadshow, you know, like, if they were on the other side of the draw, you'd be making them favourites. So yeah, we will come back to GAA in a bit more detail in about 15 minutes time. We should talk about France-Morocco tonight at 9. This is the greatest weekend for the next 4 years of football. The World Cup quarterfinals, generally undefeated for drama, quality. The cream has risen to the top. So tonight, 9 o'clock, France-Morocco. Tomorrow, 8 o'clock, Spain-Belgium. And then Saturday, 10 o'clock, Norway-England. And on Sunday, 2 o'clock in the morning, so late Saturday night, it's Argentina-Switzerland. What do we think is going to happen here?
Hard to know. We, like, the Morocco France game is probably the most interesting one, because you probably think that might be the Kerry Armagh of the competition. If Morocco beat France, that cements them as a real top level team that can do multiple things.
Spain in the next game.
Well, and then there's that provides extra narrative that maybe they peak too early beating France, and then they couldn't get back up for the Spain game. But I do think this Morocco side have enough in them, and they can play multiple ways as well.
Any of these teams actually was able to win 3 games?
Oh, I'd be surprised.
Belgium?
Belgium, yeah. Jeez, no.
Now, Onana is a loss, I think.
Unlike with Martinez, Garcia makes the tough calls.
Yeah, and he's trying to...
Yeah.
Trying to play a bit of football. Now, they were completely fluky in the previous round to come back from 2-0 down with 5 minutes left to go, but you're still alive at a quarter final and you've got, like, real depth in the squad, you know?
it's a pity that I think, is it six of the eight are all European teams? I'd like to see Colombia getting through that.
Definitely.
And nothing against Switzerland, just the fact that you want to see more teams from different
countries. And then against Argentina would have been...
Oh, box office.
In fuego.
The biggest issue for Morocco tonight is that Saibari is not going to play. He will be injured for the game. So, like, he has been the most dangerous player for Morocco throughout the tournament. Probably the fullback situation is where the battle is. Like, Hakimi likes to bomb forward. Is that going to create a mountain of space for Mbappe and Dembele, and Olise will be on the other side? But, like, what will Morocco do on that right side is probably going to define what happens in this match.
They'll have to probably play to their strength, and their strength, obviously, like, Hakimi has to get forward. If they don't, they're just going to be parking the bus, probably like what Paraguay did. So if they don't have some form of attack, France have played against teams. So Morocco kind of have to play to their strengths as well. And funny kind of subplot, like, Hakimi and Mbappe are best mates as well. So that's an interesting dynamic too, down the same sideline.
They all know each other so well.
Yeah. I'd say if, out of any of the teams left, maybe barring Spain, it's probably the worst matchup for France on paper. Should be a good game. Like, why are they so late though?
Are we disappointed so if France go out?
Disappointed?
Yeah.
To attacking principles, they're the champions in waiting. Of all the players who are playing really well, Mbappe, I think, is the closest to his peak. I mean, obviously Haaland as well, but, like, while Messi's doing amazing stuff, this isn't peak Messi, but this is peak. It appears it's peak Mbappe, and he's been unbelievable in the tournament so far. Like, from this point forward is when the tournament becomes somebody's tournament, right? It's like,
yeah,
Maradona at 86. He was good in the group stages, but it's the quarterfinal against England where he explodes. Semi-final against Belgium. And that's the bit. So it's these games this weekend where somebody's like, oh no, I'm the best player in the world. This is my World Cup.
In a similar vein to what happened after the Paraguay game the other day, which I'll admit, I don't think Morocco are going to play in the same way that Paraguay played. But I do think if Morocco park the bus here against France, even if they go on to win the tournament based on more attacking principles, because they have been playing more attacking than they did at the last World Cup, I do think the fallout and reaction will be that football lost and defensive styles won, and this is the state of football as Mikel Arteta has made it, and grand narratives will be formed. But I wouldn't believe that. Like, I think Morocco will do what it takes to get through this game. And then,
as they should do,
this is what knockout football is: quarterfinal, semifinal. Yeah. You do what you can to get to the next round, and then the final, you need to go and show it. So if Morocco parked the bus here, I'd say wouldn't hold it against them at all.
Yeah, I agree with you. Like, if your attacking style is so good, it should be able to break down that defensive style. And, like, in fairness, France have a good attacking style as anyone. I'd like to see, like, I don't know. I think Mbappe probably is the best player in that France team, but I could see Olise just taking over.
Oh, yeah. If that's the other thing that happens here, wow.
Yeah.
He's amazing.
Yeah. Who is the best player in the world? Well, is it Mbappe?
Well, not before the tournament. You wouldn't have said this season he'd had.
Probably not.
And just the difficulties he seems to be causing off the pitch for Real Madrid.
For tournament, probably Dembele.
Champions
League, but...
Ballon d'Or winner, yeah.
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 I would have said Vitinha if, you know, off the back of the Champions League for the last two seasons, but...
Yeah.
He has Roberto Martinez as manager now, and he's out.
It's about the Ballon d'Or winner is probably the third option for his international team at the minute.
I'd actually probably say Olise is the best player in the world.
Yeah. I don't think I disagree with you, you know.
Kane,
yeah. Kane deserves his flowers.
Kane has scored something ridiculous. Like, how many goals has he scored this tournament? So I think he went into this tournament with 72 goals this year or something.
I think he's second behind. Remember Messi's crazy year, 11 and 12. But he's right behind there. Like, he needs another 10 goals in the next couple of games. But, like, his record at the minute is off the charts.
Do you think he would have been better if he left Spurs a little earlier? He stayed there for a long time, through thick and thin. And now it has benefited him.
Yeah,
at this stage in his career, like, he's gotten much better since he went to Bayern.
I think you respect that as well, I think.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah.
It would have been very easy for him to head off to whoever when he was in his mid-20s. But I think when he, obviously with Pochettino there as well, I think they felt like they were building something and getting to the Champions League finals. They obviously came second as well.
Mm.
I think he was right where he needed to be. And like, he's changed his game. Like, obviously, his scoring is still off the charts, probably even better, but coming deeper. And like, he's an unbelievable football brain. Like, he's a great footballer, passer, the skill level like he has. I think that's probably underrated because he's not probably built for speed. Like Mbappe, like when Mbappe gets the ball, you're on the edge of your seat. With Kane, it's different.
Mm.
He's coming short. He gets an opportunity to shoot. Like, his finishing is probably up there with the best in the world. So is the way that the difference in how they play, although they're both still effective, I think is class.
Yeah. I can't remember who said, I think it might have been Carragher said years ago, like, that Kane was one of the best passers in Europe. And he got laughed out of the studio. It might not have been Carragher. It was someone on Sky Sports. And it did seem a bit crazy at the time, but the way he plays now, and he always had that kind of element to his game, but he's been given more license to, as of late, to just roam around midfield and pick out passes. It is beautiful to watch.
There's talk that Rice and Gehi, well, they didn't train. Obviously, Reece James didn't train as well, but all three are very doubtful for the game against Norway. If Rice is out, if Gehi's out, suddenly Dan Byrne comes in, right? And everyone's, oh, that's fine. He can look after Haaland. That'll be no problems. Is that necessarily going to work? I don't know.
I saw a classic Twitter thing yesterday that when I heard when Gabe might have been, like, I think Byrne was man-marking for Newcastle against City and he had a couple of nice headers and everyone's like, yeah, Byrne is well ahead of Haaland. But Twitter clips and a real full match is a completely different thing.
I mean, Dan Byrne, if that's your... I mean, look, maybe it's going to be Dan Byrne's World Cup. They stick him in the team and he scores two headers from a corner and away you go.
I mentioned the BBC's 3D animation a couple of times on the show, but I would implore anybody to go and watch Dan Byrne's highlights on that so you can see it from his perspective and you just see this rocket of a ball just coming down from space and it just next thing it goes back. Just gets rid of it. But I think Rice is probably more impactful in that than Gehi would be because especially with what that are created by fullbacks leaving their position as the England ones tend to do. But yeah, you would certainly give Norway much better of a chance if the two of those players are out. I don't want to return too heavily to the Ronaldo conversation, but
go on.
We may see a larger chance that we will see Ronaldo at the next World Cup based on the news this morning that Jorge Jesus has been appointed as the Portugal manager. So manager at Al Nassr knows him well, knows how to get the best at him. He might well be, he'll definitely be at the next Euros, you would imagine, but he might well be at the next World Cup based on that news. Not as manager as we speculated, but...
Yeah. He posted that, I'm just looking at it now, on his Instagram last night, Portugal Sempre, which means Portugal forever. So that can mean one or two things.
He ain't going nowhere.
Yeah.
He ain't going nowhere.
Is that not what you say when you're leaving?
Like, you just have a home World Cup coming up in 4 years. Like.
Oof. 45 years of age up front. What could you imagine?
Impact sub.
No, there isn't a hope that man will be an impact sub. There isn't a hope he'll allow it.
Jesus. He will play at the Euros, like. I think he will, like, 2 years' time.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible.
As long as he's playing club football, he's playing international football. Unless Jorge Jesus does an absolute 180 on him and says, sorry, mate, I know we've had some amazing years in Alice there, but...
Yeah, and the power that he must have with the Football Federation.
I don't know what the teammates think, like, deep down. They did come and
celebrate with him when he scored, which, you know, maybe, I suppose, with everything that had been happening before...
You had to, yeah.
If you didn't, it would have been noticeable.
Yeah.
Now, they were very good at faking it, but then I suppose...
Yeah. Like, you just know the Argentinians are just playing for Messi. I don't know. I think it's like, I think he's in a way, like, he's kind of tarnishing his reputation small, but even the fact he said that winning the Euros is more important or is a big thing as winning the World Cup, basically just saying that it's because Messi won it, I don't need to win it.
Yeah,
crazy.
It's like really, do you think that honestly? Do you think that? I'll run you through the newspapers really quickly before we get into our GA stuff here. Sorry, that last one, everybody seems convinced that Spain are going to beat Belgium and it's going to be routine.
Spain have not have been very unconvincing so far, to be fair. Lamine doesn't seem like he's 100% fitness-wise either, so... Yeah, I don't know. I just think some of those Belgian players, if they were going to win a World Cup, it would have been 4 to 8 years ago.
But Martinez, they came third, wasn't
he? Yeah, well, that was the biggest issue there, I think, yeah.
And Messi was too old 4 years ago. His time was gone. At 35, he was washed up.
Maybe I shouldn't be writing them off.
They'll be pinning that in the dressing room wall.
Yeah, I'd be honoured.
Right. Back page of The Star this morning. Fury at FAI's green light. This is Mark McCadden's story. The Stop the Game Coalition says it remains resolute that Ireland's Nations League games against Israel will not go ahead. At last night's EGM with the Aviva, the FAI's General Assembly passed a motion that endorses the association fulfilling its obligations in respect of those fixtures. The vote was 75-32 and there were 3 abstentions. So the games, as it stands, are scheduled for September 27th in Hungary and October 4th in Serbia. We'll talk more about this with Ben Symes, who was at that EGM yesterday. And then Dubs won't fear Kerry. This is Paul Galvin. We'll hear from Paul Galvin. He was at an AIB event yesterday. He thinks that, everything is right, that Dublin are playing mind games and have done it traditionally, but also in the other papers, they're carrying the lines that if Conn plays the way he does, he's almost as good as Clifford, but if Clifford continues to impress the way he has done, then Kerry should win. Conn Eyre is the headline in the Mirror, which is the same one. Kerry legend fears Dublin talisman O'Callaghan and co will dethrone Kingdom in Croke Park semi-final. We can't stop Haaland. Morgan Rogers is like, no, we can't. We're not going to try and stop him. We're going to try and stop the supply to him, which is maybe the way to do that, right?
Is he just doing the thing they did with France? It was like, yeah, we're not going to beat France anyway, so they're going to win the whole tournament. We have no chance.
Morgan Rogers.
No, Haaland I don't know what game it was, he was asked about France and he was like,
he knew he was ahead of France, he knew he was going to be dropped.
He was going to be arrested. Morgan Rogers is also going to be arrested. that team can't beat him. Now, if I was playing.
Dermot Keane asks in the comments, most importantly about the World Cup quarterfinals, who in Off the Ball are up against each other in sweepstakes?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I was on holidays when the sweepstakes was done, so I'm out.
You're out, yeah. So, Eve is the real winner here because she drew... We did it in pots. We did it in based on world rankings. So she ended up getting 2 good sides because one side ended up in
rigged
in the draw. So France, Morocco. That is myself, Morocco, and Will O'Callaghan has France.
This is why you've been so hot about.
They can hear me.
You're name checking every player. You must be doing your research.
Then we've got Norway against England. And John Duggan is England. Eve has Norway. Then we've got Argentina against Switzerland. Eve, once again, has Argentina. And Stephen Doyle is Switzerland. And then we've got Keith Tracy, drew Belgium. And Emma Carroll has Spain. So,
Who do you want to be? You want to be France, right?
You want to be France.
Yeah.
But after that... Anybody but Switzerland.
Yeah. I think I got the worst combination possible. My 2 teams were South Korea, who had an absolute disaster of a tournament. The country hates them after. And I got Tunisia, who were the worst team in the tournament and sacked their manager after 1 game.
Technically not the worst team in the tournament, though.
By 1 goal, wasn't it, in the
Keith
end?
Keith Tracy could win this. Well, he might, probably won't. He's got Belgium. But he also will get the wooden spoon.
Iraq?
Uzbekistan.
Uzbekistan, sorry, yeah.
I believe they were the worst team by 1 goal. So,
so the back page headline of The Examiner is Humphreys O'Gara will be candidate for Leinster top job. I suppose one of the things that we didn't talk about earlier on was he was asked about Lancaster and whether or not he would have his hat in the ring for the Connacht game, for the Leinster job, sorry. Yeah, look, we brought Stewart into Connacht for a very good reason, said David Humphreys. He's one of the best coaches around and you've seen yourself the impact that he's made in Connacht. I think there's huge potential down there. He's excited by what he's done. He's enjoyed bringing a lot of these young players through. And now it's about where he can take Connacht over the next few years. So that's essentially ruling him out. That was like, no. He's staying where he is. We have a contract with him.
It's good to see, yeah, because Humphreys has spoken about that before. Like his plan, or one of the key cogs in his plan for Irish rugby was to put strong head coaches in each of the provinces. So it would have felt like a backward step in that way to take Lancaster out of Connacht and put him back to Leinster. So yeah, I think that's a positive thing overall for Irish rugby. And it's good to see that, you know, you'd assume there that means Stuart Lancaster is more than happy to hang around in Connacht and continue with that kind
He's
of
doing a great job,
build.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been such an amazing turnaround over the last 6 months or so.
Yeah. Bruno's going to leave. Brazil star wants to quit tune for Arsenal. So the Rats are abandoning the sinking ship of Newcastle at a record-breaking rate. So 60 million is all it's going to cost for Bruno Guimarães. Apparently, Mikel Arteta has been lining this up for a while, although Newcastle say they want 100 million because that seems to be the price for players at the moment. They're very concerned about the fact that it'll be the exact same situation as last year, when obviously there was a strike that forced the move for Alexander Isak to Liverpool. But so far this season, obviously already they've lost Anthony Gordon and Sandro Tonali, bringing in 170 million in fairness combined. So this will be whatever on top of that, which will at least allow them to buy some replacements. But the Newcastle Saudi money hasn't worked out, has it?
No, a bit like the Liv situation. Yeah. Just seems to be going down the path. You do wonder what happens to Newcastle next after this. And what the future of the club, I'd say once again the Newcastle fans are thrown into a precarious situation of what happens to the future of their club. Now, they might bring in enough money by selling these stars to survive and be okay for the next couple of years. You'd imagine the investments that they put in might be something that an American investor or someone else might be interested in, but it's definitely going to be a couple of tough years ahead for Newcastle. They didn't really make hay with it. Sunshine either when they had the money.
Well, I think the Carabao Cup, I think that was a big thing for them, win a trophy at least. I think if they had it, like Eddie Howe seems like such a solid sort of fella, if they had maybe a manager who mightn't have been as solid or as just, you know, feet on the ground, it could have been a lot different. I think the fact that he's been there, I think he's kind of been the saving grace. Mm. That he's, I think, again, obviously when the money did come in, he was under a lot of scrutiny. He was the front facer to the press and answering the questions about obviously the Saudis and stuff like that. I think he's done an excellent job, and I think the biggest thing will be try to keep him regardless of the players that are leaving or coming. You know, I think he's a massive, massive part of what was so good about them last few years.
I feel like he was hanging on for the England job, and now that England job is unavailable pending the result at the weekend, right? So obviously Tuchel has signed a new deal to take him through. And there is a break clause, so maybe if Norway hammer them at the weekend, the outcry is such that they need somebody, and there's obviously always a reaction, foreign English, and he'd be the top for that. But like, he has been the tip of the spear for all of that stuff, and as it's kind of falling apart now, he's left, all right, I have to fix this.
Yeah.
And the whoever is signing the players last summer did a shit job. Now maybe Johan Visa comes back from the World Cup and is okay, but nothing's going to fix Nick Voltamada, is it?
You'd want to...
They turned him into a midfielder, having spent 70 million on him to be a striker, another non-scoring striker.
Yeah. That's an odd one. You'd think that United, Manchester United would be straight in for Bruno here and try get a little bit of revenge on Arsenal for robbing Declan Rice off them a couple of years ago. Manchester United have been kind of robbed in this transfer market twice by Tottenham already with Matheus Fernandes and Sandro Tonali. They brought in Andre Santos yesterday from Chelsea, which just seems like, I mean, he's a fine player who'll do okay as a replacement, but is he going to bring their midfield forward from what it is? Probably not. So like Bruno Guimarães, you'd say there's a midfielder, although he's probably a little bit too old for what Man United are going
28,
for
28, he's over the hill.
Yeah. Well, they won't buy anybody.
I know, but sure, isn't that stupid?
Yeah.
It is. Like that, you do think he's a player that's, yeah.
How'd that work out for Chelsea?
Immediately transforms that midfield rather than faffing around with another player who's going to be a bench warmer in a couple of years. So it's odd. It's odd behaviour for Man United.
The only thing about Bruno and his age is that he has the Premier League experience already, which they're quite hot on anyway, but he doesn't have any catching up to do in terms of the league physicality or anything like that. So he has that, so he's probably 2 or 3 years ahead of a player, say, coming from Serie A or Eredivisie or wherever
100%,
else.
Absolutely. And just the Athletic did a piece at the end of last season, the win percentage when he starts and when he doesn't, 45.8% win percentage when he starts, it drops to 18% when he doesn't start. And he is very, over the number of years he's been at Newcastle, I think he's started 142 games and missed 19. So that's like, you know, very available, particularly because these clubs are all playing between 60 and 70 games a year if they're going deep in three competitions. And he's just excellent all over the pitch. Like, defensively, they're stronger. He creates chances. Where does he play for Arsenal? Who's dropping out?
Odegaard, probably.
Yeah, was there talk about Odegaard maybe potentially leaving? I don't think he will, but do you drop your captain?
Unless he's planning on making that 8 position slightly more attacking, and he thinks he has enough defensive cover for with Declan Rice in there.
Maybe they want to rest Rice more, given that he has been managing that chronic injury.
If he does take Odegaard's role, if you're Eze, you're like, come on, play me. Like, maybe it's a change in style and maybe they can make it work and get bought on the pitch. But that was the case during the season, is that once Odegaard was back, it's like, all right, is it? You've been great over the last 6 weeks, but you'll be coming off the bench for the foreseeable. Mm.
You do have to give Arsenal credit here, though, if they do get Guimaraes, because this is how champions should act. Take the best players from the rest of the league that are already established to build on your side.
Oh, yeah,
whether or not they're going to play the whole season. Like, they're essentially playing 70 games a season now. So, I mean, he's going to play. So that's how champions should act. They should go and get the best players that are available from the rest of the league, weaken the rest of the league and strengthen their squad, and also take the opportunity off other teams like Man City have done for many years now with players that they didn't really need for their squad, but they just took them out as options for other teams to build on their squads. So I think Arsenal are going to go strength for strength here.
Sorry, was it Sandro Man United signed?
It was Andre Santos.
Andre Santos, sorry, yeah.
Yeah, from Chelsea.
Yeah. Happy? Excited?
Indifferent. I don't know.
Fine.
Yeah.
Grand. The longest search for a replacement for Paul Scholes continues. Like, when are they just going to go out and sign a superstar midfielder that can control the game? They've tried, to be fair. Literally all they need. It's just go and do it. How can it be this difficult?
Off the Ball Breakfast.
With Viagra Connect 50mg film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150mg tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
Off the Ball. GAA.
Look, I suppose I was just out trying to commit it to the ball. I think I thought he was going to pull in it. Clearly, obviously, tripped him. I think he didn't have possession of the ball. I think that's what Thomas Hall said to me. It was a yellow card, so I don't really know the rule, to be honest, but I was delighted. I was lucky for it.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.